Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back, everybody. It's 206. Kevin, don't go anywhere. I got a question for you. You've been in the news business for how many years now?
My hair was dark and I had a spring in my step. I guess about 30 years.
Okay.
Not so all of it here.
This whole lottery thing, it falls in line with the most common stories. I mean, you've covered this enough where how many more times can we ask people, what are you going to do if you win? You know, that and when it's really hot outside, people say, you know, how hot is it? Things like that. So where does this rank as far as the most common stories that you've done?
A lottery story?
Yeah. I mean, because we're at the point
it's not
now,
as bad as be sure to give your dog extra water because we're in a heat wave. But, you know,
put a hat on your head because it's cold outside.
That when a lotto jackpot gets to $1.6 billion with a B, people are talking about that. And so we just thought, you know, there's a lot of tragedy in the news today. We'll start with that because that's probably a happier thing that's on people's minds.
So what's been the most unique answer you've been given when, if you ask them, they win a lottery?
Well, they're all typical. I'm going to help my friends. I'm going to go to an island.
I'm going to buy some new friends.
I like the methodology. One man told me he had a Pringles can in which he put a torn up little pieces of all the possible numbers and recreated the algorithms of the lotto machine on his living room rug. So that
he must have a pretty big living room, I would imagine.
But, and then people talk about how they use their birthdays to pick it. But mostly it taps into that. What was the saying? We all lead lives of quiet desperation.
Yes.
And people would like to have a lottery ticket. But then it might be like, what's that story, The Pearl? If you get The Pearl, then your life is miserable because everybody's after you to get The Pearl.
No, I'd be pretty hard to find. And, you know, there's going to be people who may come up that I would, sure. But for the most part, I would be hard to find.
Godfather of your family. Everyone would have a request, and they'd be in line, eating crackers.
Here's the problem. They can have a request, but I only grant them on the day of my daughter's wedding.
Oh.
Remember?
Yeah.
So I'm going to make sure that they both elope. I don't have to worry about it.
All right.
I've already got this thing figured out.
Do you have a ticket, though?
Of course I do.
All right, I have to get one.
I will. You know what? I'll tell you what I'll do. When I win, I'll give you an exclusive. Let you interview me first.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
All right, I got to get back
to work.
That's
the kind of guy I am. He's Kevin Killeen, the best there is when it comes to news in St. Louis. All right, as I went to the break, this whole Saudi thing just really, it's almost in the stupid file as far as, I guess the Saudis must think we're all just like either stupid or they must not have mystery TV shows or movies over there. I don't know. But here's the one thing that nobody can tell me. And we kind of heard a little bit of it in CBS News. So at first they didn't know if you would have brought his name up, they would be like, who? We never seen him. I don't even know the guy. Then it was like, he did come by. We don't know what happened to him after that. Then it was like, we had a little problem. So the next step, it was an accident. Well, what kind of accident? Well, he was in a fight. I've never seen a fight that was ever an accident. It was intentional. But here's the question that nobody can answer. Where's the body? Okay. If you want to tell me that, he had a little fight. It was a fist fight, and he died. Well, did he die from, a fist to the head, or he did have a heart attack? Okay, I get it. He's dead. But where's the body? If you don't mind, his fiance would like to give him a nice send-off. maybe a coroner would like to see what the actual cause of death is in case there was an insurance policy at hand. We just want to just get the paperwork squared away. So if you guys can give us the body, I think we can get a lot of things resolved. And they look at you like, well, what do you mean body? Body. Hey, anybody here seen a body? I mean, how does this thing go on where everybody's just kind of like looking at each other, trying to make this up as they go? And it's not that hard. I think the stories that we heard about him maybe being dismembered and being hauled out in bits and pieces, pardon the pun, is probably more accurate considering nobody can produce a body. They can't even produce a finger or a hand or anything. I mean, so doesn't that tell you that maybe this was beyond our what we call foul play in this country? I think it's a little bit more than that. And yet nobody asks the question, where is the body? Yeah, okay, you finally came clean and said he's dead. I'm surprised you didn't say he slipped on a bar of soap and hit his head. But you said it was a fight, a fist fight. And yet we don't have a body to verify any of that. So is it me? Am I crazy? Or do you feel like me where the Saudis think we're just flat out stupid? Hey, I got news for you. I've watched enough mystery TV and movies in my lifetime to know how to solve a crime, okay? And if the guy went in the building and we never saw him come out and he was in a fist fight, according to you, and that's what he died from, then where is the body? That's all I want to know. Produce a body and we can maybe move on from this. And the next question would be, if you're in the United States, what do you do? I mean, do you look the other way and say, hey, that's not my problem? Do you, I think Dick Durbin said they need to boot the ambassador out of the country until we get a result. What do you do? The president said, man, we got $100 billion going here. We don't want to mess that up. So you've got his version. So what do you do in a situation like, because these things just don't happen this often where, let's put it this way. They probably happen in the spy business, but because it's now public, and this is the other thing. If this were, and God forbid, it happened to my good friend Zach Schmidt here, where he happened to go in somewhere and come out or not come out and they don't produce a body, I don't know if it was many people are going to complain or ask a question. Not that Zach's not a good guy. I think, Zach, I would ask for you. Where's the body? But this guy is a member of the, quote, media. He's a writer. So his brethren are trying to get to the bottom of this for two reasons. One, it could happen to them, and it's a good story. Only reasons. So if you don't have a media guy that's involved, where does this story go? You know, the family would go on TV, and they'd go on the radio, and they would complain, and they'd hold up a picture of what it used to look like. That story runs for about 3 days, and it goes away. But because this gentleman is a writer for the Washington Post, and I think there are people who write on the edge of things politically that some countries frown upon, including this one, that things could happen. And they want to make sure it doesn't happen to the next person. But when it's all said and done, I just want a body. That's all. I don't want part of a body. I don't want just an arm. I don't want a foot. I don't want just a head. I just want the body. And that way we can put it to rest. Yeah, it looks like he got hit with a good right cross, it looks like. So maybe that's what put him down. But they said they had a guy that walked in there with a bone cutter, a bone saw. It's not a good. That's the guy you don't want sitting at the Thanksgiving table with his time to carve up the turkey. When he steps up and says, hey, here, I got it. Don't worry about it. You look at him and you say, hey, maybe he's done this somewhere before. So, again, I'm going to go back and I'll put this to bed. It's just been on my mind. And like I said, if you heard the CBS News, they were kind of intimating that they're aware that we probably should produce a body. They just don't have one. Unless they get somebody to volunteer. They ask a guy, hey, listen, man, this isn't going well, and they want us to produce a body. And we just took a vote, and we think you're it. Now, don't worry, we're going to take care of your family, and we'll explain to them what happened. You gave your life for your country or whatever. We'll make it sound really impressive, but you got to go. You look like the guy. That's close enough, so you got to go. All right, speaking of going, we're going to go to a break. And when we come back, as I said earlier in the first hour, there's a gentleman who's written a book about, well, here's the name of the title of the book, The Molecule of More, How a Single Molecule in Your Brain Drives Your Love, Sex, and Creativity and Will Determine the Fate of the Human Race. He's also found a molecule, or whatever you want to call it. Science was not one of my strong suits. That can determine a person's political beliefs and why people vote the way they do. I'll let Dr. Daniel Lieberman tell us more about it when he joins us next here on Your Voice in St. Louis for the Blues and the Cardinals and everything else St. Louis, KMOX. Welcome back, everybody. We continue with At Your Service on this Sunday afternoon. I'm Mike Claiborne, and one of the things that kind of ran across my desk that I just had to talk to everybody about is energy. You know, there was a time when energy and how to come up with new ways was something that was very important to our society. I'm not sure if that's always been the case, but we're going to talk with somebody who's going to help us find a way to beat the climate change. His name is Bruce Nagy. He's got a new book out. It's called Clean Energy Age, A Guide to Beating Climate Change. Bruce, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, let's talk a little bit. There's some not so good news that was released recently, whereas a number of scientists have stated that the planet needs to clean up things really quick, or we're going to see some drastic changes. Clean energy has been something that has been encouraged by the government until recently. So my question to you is, what happened to the movement of trying to enhance clean energy in this country and certainly the world?
Well, I think actually the movement is alive and well, but if you listen to the national news, you'll be misled a little bit, I think. I think the national governments have a difficulty. They have so many masters to serve, and they can't say anything that sounds like it's right to everybody. But at the state and provincial level in North America, we are seeing a lot of action and a lot of positive action. And all of the directions are good, but as you noted, we're running out of time quickly, so the momentum isn't fast enough. That's what I think the modern environmentalists need to say. The technology all exists to solve this problem. And the book that I've put together after interviewing about 700 experts finds out that the architects and the engineers and the people designing government programs actually have a high level of consensus, just like the climate scientists. And they have a high level of consensus on what the best practices are to solve problems in three particular areas. And the three areas are buildings, power plants, and vehicles, which also happen to be the three areas that the International Energy Agency says are responsible for something like 70 or 75% of the emissions. So that's a good starting place for the top 10 lists that are in my book. And there's a top 10 list for a homeowner, there's a top 10 list for a business person, there's a top 10 list for a government person, and so on.
Okay, in that situation, let's look at the common person. Let's look at you and me, an individual. Okay. Your book talks about some things and how they can do things better. Give me an idea, and don't tell everybody everything because we want to sell a few books this afternoon, but give me an idea of how a person can take the first step in developing clean energy, let's say in their own home.
Okay. That's right. I guess people, and you know, we do need to talk about it in that way because most people care about their family, their friends, and their life. And if there was a way for them to save some dollars or save some capital budget at work or position themselves for the new economy, start a new business, whatever, then, and there is. and that's to use clean energy, because there's a lot of mythology around clean energy, and people don't know that it pays for itself fast. And if you can get a little help from the government funding it up front, you don't even have to, you can pay it back, you don't have to burden the other taxpayers, then you can do very well. And your question is, what about at home? So at home, I guess what we have is a lot of fancy schmancy technologies that you've heard of, like solar panels and geothermal underneath for heating and cooling. And those are great, but you need to start at square one. And square one is your building envelope. So you need to replace your windows, make sure they're really good, and make sure your home is properly insulated and well sealed. And lots of people don't realize that you don't really need a furnace, even in St. Louis or in Canada, where I'm from, or you don't need a big-ass air conditioner, even if you're from down in Texas. If you have a building envelope that's properly sealed, and, you know, we can put a man on the moon, why can't we build one? And we are. So thousands of homes around the country are now being built. They're called passive houses, or they're called zero-energy houses, and they all have really good envelopes. And that allows the designers of the cooling and heating systems to put in heat pumps and small appliances that don't use much energy and use clean energy.
Bruce Nagy is our guest. The name of his book is Clean Energy Age, The Guide to Beating the Climate Change. It's published by Roman and Littlefield. A point you just made, Bruce, the home builders, that's a very important industry in our country, home building, and you have a lot of barometers that build around that. How have the home builders embraced some of these energy changes directing at clean energy? Are they embracing it, or are they just using the same template that they used 15, 20 years ago?
I think it's changing. I think it's changing slowly. Like anything else, there are a lot of early adopters. There are some really great, inspired people doing some things. We're now starting to move out of pilot projects and into subdivisions that have clean energy in them. Sometimes it's watered down quite a bit, but sometimes it's very progressive. And I think that although it is an extremely important area, you're going to find that the developers and the builders have no choice, really, because the states and the cities are all changing their building codes. So new construction actually is not as much of a challenge. Within 10 to 15 years, they won't be allowed to build something that's not energy efficient. In fact, in many places, it'll have to be zero energy. What the big challenge is the existing building stock. Because I would say that about 97% of our stock is still standing each year. You know, we only change 3%. We only rebuild 3% of our building stock. So the retrofit challenge is an important one, and it's where the government can intervene and help with the upfront costs of fixing things. And as I say, I'm not a proponent of too much free money from government. I think they should do good loans and good funding and financing.
Your book explains several methods in establishing clean energy. If it's that simple, why haven't we been more vigilant before the alarm sounded here recently and over the last few years?
Well, you know, I think we've done very well. There are 300,000 electric cars that will be sold in the U.S. this year. That's a surprising development. That's Americans voting with our wallets. And we have to remember that, you know, it's easy to say the government should do more or the corporations shouldn't do this. But really, we are the corporations. We are the government. We need to put pressure on our leaders and guide them. We need to learn and share the knowledge among ourselves. It's like if you're an environmentalist and you're strapping yourself to a pipeline, that doesn't make a lot of sense if you have an SUV in your driveway and a gas furnace in your basement, right? So we need to vote with our wallets, you know, and I think we're starting to do that. The investors are all walking away from coal power and gas, even gas power now. They're putting in wind and solar for electricity. So I think we do have some good directions, but as you said, one of the slow areas is the construction industry, and it's slow, but it is going in the right direction.
A final question for Bruce Nagy, the name of the book, Clean Energy Age, A Guide to Beating the Climate Change. Bruce, how long of a process will this take before we can get that real, be on the path to cleaner energy? And also, how much will the government play in a role in both local and federal to enhance and certainly encourage, as you mentioned, the home builders, but even the just a simple American or Canadian in this case?
Yeah, As I said, I think the government has to intervene and is beginning to intervene in many states, maybe I guess a dozen or more. About your question for predicting the future, very difficult to do. I think we all know that. But I do believe, you know, we are human. We know we have to try. We've done amazing things in the past. You know, we rallied during World War II to defeat an evil enemy. You know, in the 70s when they squeezed us, when OPEC squeezed us, we all drove 55 miles an hour. We can do this. We really actually can do this. We might not be perfect. It's not going to be perfect. You can see all the storms we're having. You know, we're already late, right? But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be trying.
Bruce Nagy, thank you so much for your time, sir. It's a great book, and we wish you nothing but the best because it certainly has a real useful purpose to not only our listeners but certainly the entire world. So thank you again.
Great, thank you. Can I add just one thing?
Sure.
There's a pre-Christmas special on the book. If you want to buy it as a Christmas gift, you can go to bfnagy.com. That's my website, N-A-G-Y. And you can find the little promo code, and then you can link through to the publisher's site, which is Roman and Littlefield, R-O-W-M-A-N. And you can use that promo code to get a 30% discount pre-Christmas.
All right, Bruce, again, thank you for the time. Best of luck with the book, sir.
Thank you.
All right, we'll take a break, and we'll come back with more after this. It's At Your Service. It's Sunday afternoon. I'm Mike Claiborne. Welcome back, everybody. Well, I was doing some reading and I ran across a book that I just had to share with you. Because as we've learned in our society, if you're left or you're right, you think the other side is crazy. But I found someone who can help me understand what's going on. His name is Daniel Lieberman. He's written a book. It's called The Molecule of More: How a Single Molecule in Your Brain Drives Love, Sex, and Creativity and Will Determine the Fate of the Human Race. Daniel, thank you, first of all, for joining us today. I got such a kick out of the title, but more importantly, what it led to.
Well, thanks so much for having me on.
All right, so let me run this by you. The midterms are here, and so is anarchy that comes with it. The left and the right can't agree on much other than the fact they don't like each other. They think the other side's crazy. But wait, there's more than being just wired differently, is what you're saying?
That's right. If you ask most people, why is it that you hold certain political beliefs? They're probably going to answer it's because they've thought through the issues and this is their reasoned opinion. Now, that may be true to some degree, but in fact, there is also a genetic component that leads to the brains of liberals and conservatives being wired differently.
Okay. So with all your research and data that you've been able to amass, why is there such a divide between the left and the right?
You know, when people have different brains, they see things through a different lens. And so when you look at the other side, you say, as you pointed out, geez, that looks crazy. And the most dangerous thing is you don't say these people are wrong. You don't say I have a different opinion from these people. What you say is these people are bad. And if somebody is morally bad, that kind of gives you the freedom to attack them in a way that you wouldn't feel comfortable if it were a simple difference of opinion.
Well, so how do we arrive at this political intersection that I call more of a train wreck than anything else? And what was the tipping point on whether we finally raised an eyebrow and said, wow, this thing is nastier than what I thought?
Yeah, well, I think that in some ways, it's the way our political system is set up. People respond to outrage more than anything else. We know that when what you have is threatened, that's going to wake you up pretty much more than any kind of stimulus. And unfortunately, our political leaders have realized this, and they have replaced rational arguments with arguments to emotion. They cherry pick. They find the very worst people they can on the other side of the divide, and they say, look at that. Look what a horrible person this is. They're all like that, and we have to fight them.
So what gives, and I'm of the belief that both of our major political parties have been hijacked by a few and not a majority. What do those people have that the rest of us don't have, or we didn't have until, in some cases, it's too late?
The people who've hijacked the party?
Yeah.
Yeah. What they have, really, is a very strong interest in power. The average American pretty much just wants to live his or her life in peace. We all care about justice. We all care about equality. We all care about prosperity. And we have different opinions on how to reach these things. But really, we get along pretty much with everybody. Now, people who are interested in power, on the other hand, are going to want to fan the flames of division, because they find that's the most effective way that they can get power. And that's the problem. And our system rewards them, and our system promotes them, partly through the media, because the media is looking for eyeballs. And it's boring to say, hey, look at this person. He's an ordinary guy. He's living his life. He's nice to all of his neighbors. It's a lot more exciting to say, look at this person. He's outraged, and he's going on the attack.
You know, I call those people high-powered anarchists. They know how to stir the pot and get people worked up into a lather. And it's something that now more people have bought into. But once they buy it, it's almost like they have buyer's remorse, because once they bought the package, they didn't realize it had all the other tentacles to it that makes you uncomfortable. And I think that's where some of the divide comes in as well.
Yes, and we can say these power-hungry people are at fault, but I think that we have to take responsibility too, because we live in a democracy. It's ultimately the voters who make the decisions. And if we continue to allow our votes to be influenced by these kinds of tactics that divide us, tactics that promote bad behavior, well, we got to take some responsibility for that.
Dr. Daniel Lieberman is our guest. The name of the book is The Molecule of More, How a Single Molecule in Your Brain Drives Love, Sex, and Creativity, and Will Determine the Fate of the Human Race. All right, so we now know we've got this gene, this molecule that's a difference maker. How do we sway it, or how do we get that molecule to develop a sense of being able to sell what you're saying better to the person who is adamantly opposed to you because of your politics?
It's very hard to change your biology. I think what we need to do is understand how the other side looks at things. You know, in general, people on the left are very interested in change. They want to make things better. They want to grow the good things in this country. People on the right, on the other hand, tend to be happier and more content. They value tradition. They value on what the past has given to us that has made our lives so prosperous. They resist change. They want to keep things the same. But we're seeing each other through a very distorted lens. To the right, the left looks like tyrants. They look like they want to pass laws that are going to force people to behave in ways they don't want to. They're going to shove change down their throats. To the left, the conservatives look like they want to take us back to a time when minorities and other people were treated with gross injustice. So neither of these distorted views are correct. And I think what we need to do is try to put ourselves in the other side's shoes. See if we can't see the world through their eyes to get a better understanding.
Well, you know, that sounds great, and it really is impressive on paper. But as you just mentioned, it can be a challenge, because people aren't averse to change. People, they like the lane that they're in, and anybody that's not in that lane, they want to run them over for maybe the wrong reasons. So how do you fix that? Where do we turn this thing around? Because it may be one person at a time, or do you have to look for different leadership that has the ability to reach across and get that other person to buy into at least part of what they're selling?
I think that's a big part of it. I think we need a more enlightened leadership. You know, when you think about negotiation, one of the tactics you use is you ask yourself, what's very important to the other side that's of low value to me, that I can give them without losing something, and then maybe get something back that's of high value to me? What does the left want? Well, the left wants change. The left has identified things that are not great in this country that need to be fixed. What does the right want? Well, the right wants to be respected, and they want to more or less be left alone. I think that to conservatives, symbolism matters a great deal. And I think we see that with this controversy over NFL players kneeling for the national anthem. It seems like a small thing, but it really gets conservatives very, very upset. What does the left have to lose by giving way on that? It's symbolic, but it would make a huge difference in how they're perceived. By placating the right and saying, you know what, we're going to respect your symbols, we're going to respect your traditions, and in return, we'd like to pass these laws that we feel would bring greater justice and equality. I think that would be a winning approach. I think we've got to all give the other side what they want in return for what we want. And fortunately, in many cases, they're different things.
It's an interesting discussion. I would suggest to people who are adamantly opposed to the other side to pick up the book and take a read, and then maybe they'll get a better understanding of not only themselves, but I think, Dr. Lieberman, they would get a better understanding of what the other side may want, that you, as you mentioned, that you were willing to part with, because there was a time when negotiation meant you gave a little to get a little. Now it's just total obliteration is what one side wants, and you're not going to get anywhere with that.
That's exactly correct, yes.
Wow, we agree on that. I like it. See, you and I have already gotten it moving in the right direction. I love it. All right, the name of the book, The Molecule of More, How a Single Molecule in Your Brain Drives Love, Sex, and Creativity and Will Determine the Fate of the Human Race. I'm going to get back in touch with you on the other two categories here, the love and the sex aspect. We'll get that show going down the road, because that sounds like that could be fun as well. Dr. Lieberman, thank you for your time today. Best of luck with the book, and hopefully we'll have a chance to pick up where we left off on the other subjects in your book in the very near future.
Thanks so much, Mike. I look forward to it.
Thank you, sir. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We've got more on KMOX after this. 2:50 on a Sunday. I'm Mike Claiborne. It's been fun. We had Claire McCaskill and Josh Hawley in the first hour. You just heard from Daniel Lieberman and also Bruce Nagy in this hour talking about clean energy and also the molecule that I got to get back to him on. But there were a couple of things, and I'm going to go back to the first hour for a second. Because I'm intrigued by politics. I get a kick out of it. I know I've made a living in sports, but I love to listen to both sides and see how they determine their feelings. But here's one that I've always, I think I'm more amused by when it comes to common sense than anything else. One of which is we use the word debate. We had one here recently. Is it really a debate? I mean, if you were in high school or college, I'm not sure if that really described what you were doing. And I think most of us who were part of those things, I think John Hancock was a very good debater in his day, and I think he still is here on KMOX, but not in the manner that we see with political candidates today. But we use that word because it's convenient, because I'm not really sure what's going on, to be honest with you. Okay, you roll out a question. Person says, hey, that's a great question. Thank you. And then they just automatically start talking about the other person. They don't really have much to say about themselves. And that, I'm not sure, is a debate. That's the first thing. And maybe I'm wrong on this, but you'd have to debate me in order to change my opinion. The second one is political rallies. Has anybody ever gone to a political rally if they weren't going to support this person? I mean, if you're on the fence, do you go because you think this person is going to say something today to get you to change your feeling? I mean, isn't a political rally today more of a pep rally where everybody's all on the same team, we're all rooting for the same person,
And whatever that person says, you tell them, hey, way to go. So I don't know if it's a pep rally. And for those who need that sort of energy and motivation, it's a great way to get together and say, yeah, we told them. We'll take over the world after this one. I'm going to go out and vote tomorrow. Well, you can't vote tomorrow. Well, I'm going to go vote anyway. Or I'm going to be ready. I'm going to put my good Sunday going to meeting suit on to go vote. I don't know how you do it. But I always found that when people show up at these things, it's a pep rally. You're rooting on your candidate. And that's fine. It's okay. But for somebody who's, I want to give this person a chance, so how can I find out? Well, I'm going to go to the political rally, because there's going to be something said there that's going to change my mind or get me over the top with this person. And it just doesn't make sense to me. Again, I'm not going to tell you I'm a Rhodes Scholar. I just try and use common sense. And that's just one that's a no sale for me, along with debates. They're part of our society. We really work hard at them in order for them to go well. Some of these things are so well orchestrated, you really tip your cap to the organizers of it, from what you wear to what you say. What are some of the dog whistle words that you want to use that reaches out to others? Which is another interesting thing we have going here. First of all, the two words that I really just have no use for anymore, liberals and conservatives, just don't have time for them, because you get typecast. And I don't know if we should typecast an entire group of people, because it's always, when it's said, it's a negative term. And I know people who are what you would call conservative that I don't think are all bad. I know liberals in the same manner. But once you get that label, man, look out. It's not healthy. It's not good. So just a couple of political observations on my part that have come my way that I haven't had a chance to share with you in a while. But here we are today, and we had some fun. At least I did. And hopefully you did. If not, you gotta find a lane. You got to find a lane. All right, I want to thank a couple of people. Claire McCaskill, Senator McCaskill, and Josh Hawley for coming on. I've met the senator a couple of times. She's a Cardinal fan, see her at the ballpark. I've not had the pleasure of meeting Josh Hawley, and we had our conversation. And I had a lady call and said, well, you know, he didn't get as much time. I asked the same questions, okay, to each one of them. One person wanted to go longer because there was no time limit. At 2 hours. They can talk all they want. But so if Josh's answers were more concise, I thought he got his point out. I thought the senator got her point out. So for you, our listener, hopefully you got something out of it. I know I did. I found them to be two engaging people who have a real passion for this job, that be it senator from the great state of Missouri. So however you see it, just do this. Go vote. Let your voice be heard. That's really all I care about. I don't care who you vote for. Because my vote's no bigger than yours, and vice versa. And that's something we all should take into account. While we feel like some people have more impact, no, they don't. They can only do it once, unless you're in Chicago, and then you can do it a few times the way it used to be in the old days. All right, we're out of time for today. Josh Hawley, Claire McCaskill, thank you. And for all of our listeners, we appreciate what you did as well. We look forward to talking to you soon here on KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.